With over 27 years of experience in the financial services industry, Michelle Washington is a dedicated vice president and business banker at Frost Bank. Since joining the team in 2023, she has excelled in developing and nurturing strong relationships within the community, providing clients with in-depth knowledge of Frost's comprehensive suite of services. Michelle's diverse background includes roles as a retail banker, branch manager, treasury officer, business banker, and commercial lender. Her extensive expertise makes her a valuable asset to the commercial banking team. Michelle holds a Bachelor's of Science in Business Management from Alabama Agricultural and Mechanical University. Beyond her professional achievements, she is a proud mother of three and grandmother of one. She's an avid traveler. Michelle delights in exploring the world and immersing herself in local cultures. Whether savoring crab legs in Alaska, enjoying baked beans in Boston, driving classic cars in Cuba, or indulging in pizza in Italy, when she isn't traveling, she can be found reliving nostalgic moments on the roller skating rink. Help me welcome my friend, Michelle Washington. Welcome back to the CEO Mindset Podcast. I'm Andrea Patrick, your host, and I'm so happy that you are joining me today. Subscribe if a CEO mindset is something you want to obtain and you want to find the intersection where your work and life coexist. The sky is the limit when you're clear about your value, consistent in the way you share said value, and you're upfront and honest about who you are while sharing it. There are so many examples to follow and learn from. Let's get into today's, shall we? Okay, guys, as I just shared with you, we are about to dive into a serious conversation with our girlfriend, Miss Michelle from my leadership class. Now, I am super excited to talk to her because she is in a very particular position that she can help us sort of start to understand the inner workings of the financial industry as it pertains to entrepreneurs, especially female entrepreneurs, minority entrepreneurs who are trying to get funding, trying to prepare themselves for funding. And I think it's the great conversation to have, whether you're thinking about starting a business or you're ready to scale your business. I think there's some interesting information that she's going to share with us that's going to help you wrap your head around exactly what the issue is and not necessarily what you think it is. So let's dive in. Hello, Michelle. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hello. Hello. I'm so happy to be here. So happy to support and go through this process with you.
Yay. Now, we're not going to keep Michelle long because she is a bigwig at her bank, honey. We can't be having her out of commission for too long. So let's get started. So okay. I like to ask my guests when we first get on to tell us a little bit something about themselves that's not necessarily in the bio. I like to ease everybody in. This seems like a pretty simple question.
Okay. Easing me in. Let's see. Something that's unique about me or
something that is not, people might be surprised by that wasn't in your bio.
Okay. So it's not in my bio that I am the only child that my mother had. And with Easter just passing us by, I am that type of child where I would never say that I'm spoiled because fruit and vegetables spoil. I was loved as a child. And my mother was so awesome that even through my college years, I still received an Easter basket. So after, yes, ma'am. So after, you know, life took place and start life and, you know, get married, have children. And I was like, wait a minute, you know, I let this lady off the hook. I haven't gotten an Easter basket in a while. So I call her like, hey, I can't believe that postman did this to you. Like, why? What happened? And she's like, what do you mean? I said, I didn't get an Easter basket. She's like, Michelle, you have more kids than I do. What do you mean? I said, unexcusable. I deserve and I should get an Easter basket. So even this past 2 weeks ago, ma'am, where's my Easter basket?
Hilarious. I relate to that because my youngest 22-year-old kind of sat me down before Easter and told me that she too had expectations to get an Easter basket. So I had to get Easter baskets for my 22-year-old and my two 26-year-olds because I couldn't just do one.
Exactly. Great mother.
I tell you.
That's a great mother there. Yes.
Hilarious. Okay, let's dive into this conversation because
As you know, this season on the podcast, it's about empowering, encouraging, and educating our minority-owned business owners, minority professionals, because we're just not in the same place we were, you know, when things were a little bit easier. So instead of pointing fingers and blaming people, I really want this podcast season to be about encouraging people to be their best, get them the information they need to make their best decisions. And so that's really why I wanted to have you on the show, because so often, especially in the financial space, you know, you hear the tales of discrimination and people being frustrated, and, you know, and they have their reasons. People have their reasons that they sort of fill in the blanks as to why these things are happening. But being that you are a minority, double minority, female and Black, and you are in a position that can really educate us about these finances, I really want to talk to you about it. So with that in mind, what have been some of your biggest lessons being in this space, being who you are, and knowing some of the challenges that, you know, minorities face, period, not just in the financial industry, but as a Black woman in the financial industry, what have been some of your biggest lessons? And can you just go ahead and help us out so that we don't have to fall into those same traps by giving us advice?
Indeed. So biggest lesson on what I've learned in my process, because I've been in banking, as you said, 27 years. The difference is being a great business banker is having a relationship with the client, fully understanding what they're trying to do or what they want to do. And what I try not to say to my clients is declined. Mm-hmm. I don't like that word. I'll say at this time, we may not have a path to approval, but this is the reason why. And I'm always going to give reasons why. I know there are some bankers out there that don't go the extra mile and don't care. But how I do my careers, how I say that is I'm giving a client everything that I believe they need based on what they've told me at the time, because I live and work in my community. So I don't want to be at the grocery store walking down the street. And it's like, oh, Lord, there's Mr. Smith over there. And I did him dirty. That'll never be
correct.
Me, because again,
correct.
I live and work in my community. So some of the things that I've done, I think one of the lessons that I learned early on is truly understanding the need and the use for the funds. If that's not presented well to the bank or to the underwriters, it can ruin the deal for an approval.
Ooh.
And the reason, because I had a deal early in my career, I put in the application. This is where I say I was an order taker as opposed to a actual trusted advisor, because a client came in and said they wanted $100,000. I said, okay, what are you using it for? They gave me some generic working capital. I'm like, okay, I got the documentation. I submitted it. It was declined. And I was like, okay. I said, help me understand what happened here. And he looked at everything. He said, now, what did they truly need the money for? And I'm like, working capital. They said, what does that truly mean?
Mm.
And at the time I was like, working capital. So
it means what it
is. Yeah, from that point on, I realized I have to dig deeper. And back in the day, we had to double click. When you want to have additional information on something, you double clicked. I would double click on, explain to me what that means. How are you going to treat, what do you need for these funds? And one thing I got to the point and I started saying, is this helping with expanding your business, growing your business, or are we financing managerial mistakes that you have in your company? Because that's a big difference. And that's one of those where they look like, wait a minute. Because how we look at it as a financial institution is working capital, that can be a lot of things. But if you're a cash-based business, meaning you receive your funds at the time of service, why do you need a line of credit? Unless you're rolling out a new product, a new service, something that's growth. Otherwise, you're paid up front for your business.
So it becomes a mismanagement of funds. And now you're trying, you want us to help you right your wrong.
Supported. Correct.
Wow. I think that's very important for us to hear, because sometimes we get into this situation as the business owner wanting this money, and we can get in our heads about why we're getting a no, and we don't look at the facts.
Further
right?
into it. Correct.
And I think that what you said is true, because you had that lesson and now you know to dig deeper and ask questions differently. And you also know you've decided within yourself that you're not going to use the word decline, but sort of give more, a little bit more insight into the reason behind the decline. a lot of bankers aren't doing that. And so what's happening is people are being turned away without having the reason why. And then they, I think it is perpetuated because they'll go somewhere else thinking that they can, you know, maybe it was the banker or that banker didn't like me or there was discrimination or something like that. When the truth of the matter is, you just didn't have your ducks in a row. And that's kind of why, that's why I wanted you here, because I knew that you would be able to give us these answers, because I want us to go in the first time with the right information, having put our ducks in a row and done our due diligence, so that we at least know that part is done. And then if for some reason you're declined after that, then we can say, okay, well, we did everything that we were supposed to do, and we can look at that at that time. But if we haven't gotten our ducks in a row, it's difficult to point the finger at the person, you know, you're applying. Right. It's very hard. You're shooting the messenger and not taking care of your message.
That's exactly. Exactly.
So based on what you've seen, why, so do you think that this is mostly the reason, given your experience? Like, I know you can't speak for everyone, but do you think this is the biggest reason that women and minorities are struggling to secure funding that you've seen? Is there something else, or is this primarily it? Like, they're not coming with all of their ducks in a row.
It's a combination of a lot of things. A lot of times what I see is the separation of home and business. Okay. Where I always tell people, you know, make sure you separate business and personal when it comes to expenses and charges on debit cards, credit cards, that type of thing. But the other part is they come in and say, I want to get a loan, but I don't want my spouse to be on the application. Okay, that's fine. We don't require your spouse to be on the application. But I, you know, this is where my training and my years in business come into play. Let's look at you globally. All the debt that you have out there, is it joint debt? Can you support all of that debt based on just your income alone? We're talking about mortgage, any auto loans, any student loans you may have signed for the children, any credit cards, any of that. Can you do it by yourself? And I would say 90% of the time, it's a no. I said, okay, then let's think about this. You don't want your spouse on there, so that means we can't use his income. That's priority number one. If he's on the application, we use his income. If he's not on the application, we cannot use his income. So that's one of those things, like, okay, where do we go from here?
So what you're saying is, I have a mortgage and my name is on the mortgage, and I am making, say my house note is $1,000. I don't know where that's coming from. A tiny house. It's a tiny house.
Okay.
So my mortgage is $1,000 and I pay $500 of the mortgage and my husband pays $500 of the mortgage. Mm-hmm. So when I go to get my bank loan for my business and I say, I don't want my husband on the mortgage, they're going to look at the mortgage because my name is on it. And they're going to see that the mortgage is $1,000. And they're going to say, oh, so you're paying the whole mortgage, or you have the ability to pay the whole mortgage plus all these other things with just the salary you're showing us, just the income that you're saying. And then a lot of times what you're saying is that they aren't able to do that.
Correct.
But because they don't want to put their husband on or their spouse on the mortgage, it looks like they don't make enough money to handle the debt
to support the deal. Correct. Correct.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, that's one of my number one issues that I run into, where it's that this is my business, it's my.
Right.
And they don't understand that, yes, your my is great, but at the same time, the y'all and y'all debt needs to be accounted for and see who can support that. The other thing I see is you have individuals that will say, this is my soror, this is my whomever, my longtime friend, we're going into business together. And I say this 100% of the time to business owners, have you all had an open and honest conversation about credit? Oh, yeah. I've known her for years. No. Have you had the credit of, this is my credit score and my credit report right here? Let me see yours. Because when you're going into business with someone, it has to be that way, because I've had so many deals go south because you had partner A sitting at a 725 and partner B sitting at a 425. There's nothing we can do. Even though that 425 has a house, has a car, has this, on the outside looks like they're doing well, but they're not credit wise. Mm-hmm. And that's one big thing that all financial institutions are going to look at is what's your credit? What's your credit look like? Because that's your character. You can't mm-hmm. separate that from the business because you are the business.
Yes, yes. That is so important to say. I like that because you're right. People try to go into business with friends and, mm-hmm. and Soros.
And even family members.
Right, and family members. And we're not looking at the credit score, which goes back to the whole reason for this series in the first place. I think when we get to the underlying root of some of the challenges that we are facing, it is clear to me, just based on the three interviews I've had with my mm-hmm. leadership classmates, just based on those conversations alone, let alone the research that I've done for my own solo podcast, it's very clear that there is room for growth. I'll say mm-hmm. it that way. There's mm-hmm. room for growth, and there is room for us to empower ourselves, get ourselves where we need to be education-wise, and just being really transparent and honest with mm-hmm. where we are and what we need to do to be our best so that we can do our best. And then let's start approaching these things. Because what I'm hearing from you is that, like, a lot of the times it could be discrimination. Okay, I'm not going to say that that doesn't happen because it does. But a lot of the times it could possibly be that our ducks are not in a row and that we need to get our ducks in a row. So what you're saying is, number one, you need to get your credit together and work on that. Number two, if you want a business loan, you have to look at all of your debt, everything your name is on. You have to think about that. As it relates to
including things you have co-signed for. I have some people that have co-signed for a child, for an automobile, or co-signed. All that comes into play, whether you're paying it or not. If it's on your credit, what the financial institution is going to look at is if things go south with whoever's paying that, will you be able to step in and save your credit?
I'm telling you, that's a big deal. And we have to think about these things before we do them. Mm-hmm. We have to, like, even like you just can't go into it thinking Tommy needs my help. This is hard, and I'm just gonna. He needs a car, and girl, if Tommy can't pay that bill, or if you know in the future that you have these goals for yourself, mm-hmm. this is gonna play a role in it. So you have to be thinking about those things. That's good.
And that's another thing that too, as far as preparation and knowing, looking forward. That's something that's very important. I also tell my business owners the same thing, that when I've had to say at this time, we don't have a path to approval. I say, okay, this is what we have to look at. And I give the example, like if you're going to get married on Saturday, mm-hmm. on Thursday before your wedding, you're not going to go to a new hairstylist, a new makeup artist, a new seamstress. You're not doing any of that. You're going to plan for that. You have to plan, you know, and you're going to search out, you know, a new caterer. You're not doing any of that. You're going to test everything. It's the same thing when it comes to lending. Prepare yourself for lending. And that starts a couple years before, especially depending on the amount of loan that you're looking for.
And your credit at the time.
So it's the credit. The credit is number one. Then it comes to, let's look at your financials, because ultimately I hear people say, oh, the banks are discriminating and they're doing this. No, banks are looking at numbers.
Facts.
Numbers are not there. Not at all. And in this space, we're not asking for your race and we're not asking for that information. It's solely on numbers. So when I say, okay, let's look at your taxes, and you filed your taxes, there's three ways of filing taxes. The wrong way, we're not dealing with that at all. You can file your taxes to minimize your tax liability, which is fine and it's totally legal, but you're taking all the money out of the business to show, you know, to lessen your tax liability.
Right. So then when it's time to get a loan, you're like, well, you're not making any money. Like, you haven't shown any money.
Exactly. So when you know you want to do lending, or you know you want to expand, let your CPA know that. And that's another thing too, as far as people that you need to have. There's another three things you need to have in your corner is your banker, your CPA, and your accountant. CPA and your attorney. Those all three need to be in line, and they need to know one another. So you have conversations on, this is where I'm trying to take my business. I want to make sure everyone's on the same page. CPA, do my taxes accordingly. I want to show some growth. You may have to pay a little bit in taxes, but if you're showing that you made your gross was, say, for instance, $1.5 million, let's think big, but But then at the bottom, you're showing $250,000, which is still good because you left money in the business. That gives the ability to pay some kind of loans. You can pay on loans that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the cash flow. So that's the difference.
And it's really good to hear, because I think as I work with smaller businesses, I work with micro businesses. I mean, for a lot of my businesses, so they're not going to be in the 1.5 million range. I'm trying to get there though. You know, lift me up in prayer. but so for the smaller businesses, I don't think that they are thinking along those lines. I think they're thinking, I got to make my money back, and I need to get that tax refund so that I can put it back in the business. But in shorting themselves to get the tax refund, if you get to a point where you are ready to expand, what you're saying is when you go to look to get that loan, they're going to be like, well, you showed on your taxes that you didn't make any money or that you lost money. I can't trust, given this factual documentation that you turned to the IRS, that you're going to be able to pay a loan back. And it doesn't, and at that point, it doesn't matter really what your credit score is. It doesn't really matter, you know, what your debt to income ratio is that way, because you're saying based on taxes for the previous year that you didn't do well. So it's going to be hard to overcome and then come back and say, well, I know I said that, but the truth of the matter is, because you're not going to say, oh, I was, you know, you have to think about these things.
And to piggyback on that, any financial institution cannot unsee what they've already seen.
Right.
And that is so important. Unless there is a oversight or something like that, there shouldn't be two tax returns. Like, oh, I meant to give you these instead of these.
No. Oh, goodness. I know somebody tries it too. I know they try
Multiple times. And it's hard for me as a banker to say to my underwriter, these are the updated financials.
Right. Updated tax returns from last year? How'd that happen?
No. Yeah, no, wow. We don't do that. And one thing, and I know we talked about transparency, that's very important. When I'm talking with my client, I'm asking, please be transparent with me, because I'm going to look at the numbers. I'm going to look at some things. I'm going to Google some things. I'm going to look at your business as a whole. If there's any deficiencies that I identify, I want to address those before I get it to my underwriter. If for whatever reason, there's something that you have not told me and the underwriter discovers it, now I'm like, dude, you know, you could have told me this and I would have been able to mitigate it before getting to this point. It was one client several years ago, and I give all praise to my underwriter because they were amazing. The underwriter came back to me and said, this guy's going through a divorce. I said, where in the application did you see that? I did the financial. I went through the financials. He had an apartment. And it was something else that was out there. He said he has a separate household altogether. That's on the side, in addition to his primary home. And I was like, oh. So I go back to the client. I said, are you in the middle of a divorce? He was like, yeah. I was like, okay. And that changes parameters, because now you're considered in a lawsuit somewhat. And we don't know what that's going to look like when you have to sell your home, if you have to buy it. What you have to do. So that's going to affect you financially. And I mean, everyone who's gone through a divorce knows that at some level that affects you financially, where there's just a one-time hit or multiple years if you have children or something like that, or you're in a state that actually has alimony. Those play a factor. So be completely honest with your banker when you're trying to get lending. And then one other thing that you said, I wanted to kind of circle back to, when someone says they want to get more back on their taxes, so they don't want to claim as much. Think about this. You get that $10,000 back on your taxes, but you're missing out on a loan that could be $50,000.
Wow. You cut off your nose to spite your face.
Definitely. Often. Wow. And that's often what I see a lot.
It's the short-sightedness though. That's kind of what that boils down to, is the short-sightedness. And that's where I want us to begin to change our mindset, because we can't think short-sightedly. We have to start looking at having a long-term view of our businesses and our households, honestly, because we cannot, the moment-to-moment living, we can't do. We have to plan. If you have a business, you may not be where you want to be, but you have to make those decisions right now that are going to affect you long-term. Like you said, you may not be able to get the loan now, but you have to start planning and thinking along those lines. And like you said, keep your accountant, your lawyer, and your bookkeeper all in the CPA. Yeah, CPA, bookkeeper, and lawyer all kind of understanding one another so that they are keeping you on track, so that your bookkeeper can kind of keep you on a monthly basis saying, okay, have you been turning in your receipts? Are you watching your spending or whatever, whatever. So that when you get that documentation to your accountant and you say, okay, I'm thinking about expanding. I'm going to need a loan in the next 2 years. Can you start helping me to get myself together, getting all my ducks in a row, my paperwork together, you know, and your lawyer can do what they need to do in order to prepare for that as well. But we can't come up with the idea on Monday and think we're going to go get the loan on Wednesday. I mean, that's just not how it works. We have to start empowering ourselves with the knowledge and the information and the due diligence to go after these things and be on solid footing when we turn in those applications. When we come sit in your office, there shouldn't be any discovery of a divorce or anything else.
Correct. One other thing too that I want to put out there is while you're going around looking for a financial institution, you need to audition or interview them to make sure they have an appetite for the industry that you're in. Make sure they're doing startup lending, because all financial institutions do not. Some are SBA preferred lenders, many are not. Some will do startup lending, many will not do startup lending.
Wow. So that's even more information. I'm looking at my questions going, girl, I'm ready to just talk about this. Okay. So that makes sense, because that's good. And it's kind of the same with just about everything else. It's going in, you need to kind of interview based your on bank. What, yeah, interview your bank. Not all banks are created equal.
Mm-hmm. I've told people many times, like, for instance, if you're able to get into a credit union, get into a credit union.
Good. I'm in a credit union.
On the personal side, most credit unions don't do business banking well. If they do it at all, they may allow you to open an account, but lending is going to be few and far between. Mm-hmm. When it comes to your lending for startups, your more regional community banks are going to be really good at those, where your national, the bigger, you know, big banks, the Chase, Wells Fargo, they typically are not going to do startup lending.
Interesting. That's good info. That is really good info. That's really good. And it goes really kind of in line with what I teach clients when I'm telling them to prepare for any aspect of their scale, is to really understand what it is they need to do and be their best to go after that upgrade or whatever, or to scale. And this is in line with that. You need to have all your, like, do your due diligence, talking to your banks when you're thinking about starting your business. It's not just what do you like to do and who do you want to serve, but also where do you want to open that business account? Because you have to prepare for the scale. I've gone through the process where, because I had an account at one of your, I don't even know if Wells Fargo is one of your competitors, but at a Wells Fargo, and it was a business account. But when I got my LLC, I moved it to a different bank. Well, based on what you're saying, if I want to get a loan, where I moved it to may not be the best option. So you really, when you're starting your business, that's one of those things that you need to think about based on what you said, because you want to go ahead and start, plant the seed there. Because again, when you first started this conversation, you talked about relationship building and knowing who your banker is. Having that relationship could mean the difference in not necessarily you getting the loan or not getting the loan, but them doing their best to help you get the loan, doing their best to maybe prepare you. They can't do much. I understand. I saw the face. I know that they can't. I know that they can't, like, get you the loan, but like what you're saying, the way you went from, I don't do decline, I say the other thing that you said.
Yeah, a path to approval is not present.
Right. But that to me is still part of their relationship process, because if you don't have a relationship, they'll just say it's declined. But if you have a relationship, you'll try to soften the blow. And you may even, like you said, you'll go a step farther and say, okay, this is sort of why the path is not there at this point. And that gives a person the opportunity to go and correct the problem and then come back.
And they do that. I've had customers that have done that, even a couple of ladies that have done that recently. I talked to them last January, 2024, wasn't able to get to an approval that way. And I told them why. They circled back around a few months ago and was like, okay, we've adjusted some things. Let's move forward. Okay, great. Let's do that. And now we're on a path to approval.
There we go. Mm-hmm. But that, so I think the lesson here, as I'm talking to you, is regardless of who you are, there is a level of personal growth and development that you need to do in order to understand that there are certain decisions that have to be made in preparation for some of these financial circumstances and desires that we have as business owners and even in the personal space. And so I think that it's important for us to acknowledge that and not look at sort of excuses for why we think we're not getting the things that we want and start owning up to the fact that maybe we just weren't as prepared as we thought we were.
Correct.
So aside from us not having our ducks in a row, how do you think, I mean, this probably isn't, why do you think, I have the question here is, what do you think the challenges are that Black women have with respect to profitability and scalability in comparison to other groups? But I think we kind of talked about that because I really believe that some of it might be discrimination, but I think some of it is less, maybe it's even a lack of education, a lack of understanding, financial literacy, maybe.
I think it's 100% that. Again, I'm not going to go down the path of discrimination because as an African-American woman, I don't see that because I don't discriminate, but I know that some of my counterparts may or may not, I don't know.
Right.
It happens out there. But one thing that I think a lot of people run into is thinking that the bank wants to go in business with them.
Mm.
And that is so where I've had many a conversation, many of weeks with individuals of all races that will come in and say, I have a great idea. I just need a little support. Okay. We talk through the plan and say, okay, you need $100,000. Okay, great. What are we going to use it for? They have it spelled out as far as use of funds and everything. And I say, okay, how much cash are you prepared to inject into this deal? And they have nothing. So now I'm having that hard conversation of, okay, why does this bank or any other financial institution want to go into business and say, okay, here's your money. You go out.
It's 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. No, it's not going to happen. Even if we bring the SBA into the part, you still got to put in at least 10%. So where's your money? Where's your excess funds? Oh, I didn't have any. I thought my idea was my sweat equity.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know what? That works well when you're building a house, but not when you're trying to build a business. This is not going to work that way. You got to have some kind of
at least when you're trying to get money. Sweat equity is a big deal when you're starting out and you're bootstrapping it. You do have to put in the sweat equity, but when you make the step to go to the bank, you do have to have
cash injection. And that can be, I mean, that could be that you've already paid for a machine or you've already paid for supplies. That can count in a lot of times, but how much out of pocket have you spent? Or how much have you set aside for this project? I've asked that question multiple times. And then I get that look of the deer in the head, like, what do you mean? How much have I set aside? How much have you set aside for this project?
Yeah, you have to, and you know what? The same mentality, if we will look at it. So think about it this way. So small businesses that I've worked with in the past, when they first get started, they do a lot of bartering, right? So I'll do this for you. You do this for me. But there comes a point in your business where you get tired of that dynamic because you want to start making money, right? So you get to a point where you start saying to that person that wants to barter, you're like, well, no, I would prefer that you pay for my services because you want them to have some skin in the game so that they're committed to the process. If you continue to give stuff away for free, then there's no value in the thing that you're giving away. And so I think the same holds true, too, if we could adopt that mindset that the bank is not going to give you the money for free because then you don't have any skin in the game. There's no skin in the game.
Correct.
But if you are there, like you said, injecting some of your own money, then the bank sees that you're serious about what it is you're trying to do, that there's a level of commitment there. And you're going to do your diligence to make it successful because you're committed to it.
Because, I mean, you can't imagine how many times I've heard, I don't want to put my house in this deal. I don't want to lose my house.
Well, you're not even confident in yourself.
So often I get that because they'll say, what other avenues can I do to get funds up? I'm like, okay, let's go down the gamut. So let's look at business lending first. If that's not an option for whatever reason, we can't do SBA because everyone can't do SBA. And we can talk about that a little bit later. I'll say, okay, let's look at any grants that are out there. Okay, for your industry and what you want to do. That's not an option. You can't find any. Okay, how about a home equity loan? Oh, I don't want to put my house in it. Okay, that speaks volumes. And then last but not least, and this is my last ditch resort, is that what I would tell people, any abandoned 401ks that you have that are just sitting out there. It's funds that you don't necessarily see, but you have access to. Now, you may have to take a hit on as far as taxes, but at least mm-hmm. you're getting there's ways that your CPA can do it where these funds went into a business and you can do some, you know, some legal stuff on your taxes. Yeah. To make that, to bridge that gap, but at least you're getting the funds that you need. One thing that I would never recommend is to get a loan for the down payment for another loan. No.
Oh.
I've had so many people say that they're doing that. I'm like, no, we're going to stop right here. If you have to go get a loan for the down payment of this loan, we're at a no. We're at a no. If that's your thought pattern.
Well, it seems like, you know, there are a lot of mindset shifts that need to happen to even, I mean, I just think I'm listening to you and I'm like, I can't even imagine that somebody would not want to invest. Like, how can you expect someone else to invest in you if you're not willing to invest in yourself?
But they don't see it that. They're like, why would I want you to take my home? The last thing the bank wants is to take your home.
Right. We want you to be successful. They want you to be successful. They're giving
you money.
They
don't want
to lose your money. They don't want to lose your money either. So I think that's where we could start, is that just having the confidence in the thing that we're trying to do. And mm-hmm. if you can't go into a bank and know, like, have the mindset, well, this is a great idea. Like, I'm going to put all I can into it. I'm going to do my best. And, you know, then it's probably not a good idea for you to walk into the bank and try to ask for the loan, to me, is what it sounds mm-hmm. like.
And then also being realistic on what your request is. So typically, say for instance, you have a business client that comes in, and we'll go on the as you say, the micro area, okay?
Yeah. So,
business made, let's say, $100,000.
Okay.
Okay, last year. They walk in, and I'll say, okay, approval, and the one that will need some work next time, okay?
Okay.
One that will need some work the next time is, I come in, I made $100,000 last year. I want to borrow $80,000. Okay, help me understand, why do you need $80,000? Well, I'm going to do some expansion. I'm going to do this. I'm going to need this. I'm like, okay, what are we using as collateral? And that's when they go that, oh, okay. So let's go over to this side where the approval is. I made $100,000 last year. I'm trying to do some expansion, bring on some new software, bring on a new employee, so I increase my FTE. I need to borrow about $10,000 on the line of credit. That's more realistic because rule of thumb is 10% of your previous year's annual sales. That makes sense. Can we go higher? Yes, if you're looking at, and this is just on a line of credit, so it's not really something like specific, but if you're looking at equipment purchase, some banks can go up to 100% financing on equipment. You're looking at software, that's soft cost. We can look at doing that too. So there's some options you can have for that. Real estate, again, different calculation, but can still take place. So it's a matter of how things are structured and what you're wanting to do for the funds and if it makes sense.
This is all great information. And I think this is going to be good for the listener too, that is anticipating potential growth or really starting to think about scaling and whether or not they're going to need a little financial assistance. It's a good indicator as to how much money they'll be able to get, realistically what it is they should be asking for and what they need to bring to the table or be prepared for once they get to the bank. And I think that we can look at building up our knowledge, the financial literacy, like I said. I think that's a lot of it because, like you said, you can't come in there asking for, you know, the whole kit and caboodle and you don't want to put any put any funds in yourself. So just being mm-hmm. naive and thinking that that's possible is, I think anybody that had that thought is going to be, they're going to
And it's a lot of people mistaken.
Oh, wow. It's just not weird.
And that's one of those things where I've told business owners who I'll have a conversation, because simply what I do with my clients, my book of business, is I try to contact them at least once a quarter and just talk about how things are going. Just make sure I'm top of mind when something does come up and it's in the financial realm that you think of Michelle. Mm. Great. In some situations, I'll reach out and I'm like, okay, how's things going? Things are going great. You know, I went somewhere else and tried to get a loan. And they declined me before because of X, Y, Z. I'm like, okay, why didn't you come to me? Why I didn't think about it? Or I've been told that your financial institution, this is at my last one, you like giving lines of credit, or how they say, you want to give an umbrella when it's not raining, but when it's raining, you want to say no. You know what? That's very good. But at the same time, the best time to go to the bank is when you don't need the money. That's the best time because your business is doing well, obviously. When right. you need it and you're in desperate.
If you've gotten yourself in a little bit of trouble.
In that situation, yeah, that's when it's going to be harder to get it because the banks can see trends of your accounts. We can see, not your accounts, of your financials. Because mm-hmm. one other thing that just burns my biscuits is a customer will come in, yes, and say, I don't have my financials, but my accounts are here. You can look at my statement. No, ma'am, we're not looking at your bank statement to determine what's in there. No, not going to happen. Every business owner should know, I would say from one quarter to the next or monthly, what their annual sales are looking like. Where are you year to date? That should be something that should be top of knowledge if you're going to be successful. Not right. that you need to rival it off, but you should be able to hit a button and say, okay, it is such and such. That's how much I've made so far. Mm-hmm. I did a lunch and learn here a couple months ago with one of my clients that went through one of our programs here at the bank. And she brought in a lot of people, and we're going through the process. And I wanted to do cash flow with them because sometimes people don't understand what cash flow actually looks like. So most of them have broad tax returns. One lady didn't. So I said, okay, you go through your bank statement and you look at all your deposits because this is your business account. Perfect. She's doing the calculations and I see her over there and I saw her going like, and she was flustered. Uh-oh. I mean, thoroughly flustered to the point of anger. And I said, you know, ma'am, what's going on? She said, this has to be wrong.
Uh-oh.
I don't understand. She said, well, this says I made 100,000. She said, I have no clue where that money is or went. This woman had grown her business to a six-figure situation and had no clue she had made that much money. I said, this is your business account. Are there any other funds that go into this account at all? She said, no. No, there isn't. But had no clue that she had made that much money. I said, this is where the disconnect comes at. This is where you need to budget. This is where you need to, as a business owner, pay yourself something and leave money in the business. Make sure your business is structured correctly because so often it's not. It's so many different things. I'm going all over the place.
Girl, listen, I need to come sit down with you.
Have you ever heard of the Rat Pack? It was a group of guys, thick as thieves, in the entertainment industry years ago. They stuck together like glue and supported one another. Would you like a Rat Pack of your own? That brings me to my ebook, From Clicks to Clients, Mastering Sales and Marketing Funnels. If you want your own Rat Pack, that means you want a process to take them from the beginning, top of your funnel, all the way down to an actual conversion. And that is what this ebook helps you do. So make sure you head down to the description box below and grab a copy of From Clicks to Clients, Mastering Sales and Marketing Funnels today. All right, let's get back to today's video, shall we?
So I can understand where some people would be lacking in this area, but I do recognize the importance and value of making sure mm-hmm. that all of your ducks are in a row. And again, which is why I wanted to have these conversations because, you know, you can be told these things, right? But until you understand how they play a role in the things that you actually desire mm-hmm. down the road, it's mm-hmm. easy for you to hear it and dismiss it. But when you know you have, I mean, quite honestly, where we are, just as the world, like the world is in a a really big transition period where there could be a recession coming down the line. There could be a lot of financial distress coming down the line. And if you don't have this information, especially as a business owner, and know that it might not happen this year, but it could happen next year. Now is the time to start educating yourself and getting, and preparing yourself for some of these things. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a few more questions and then I'm going to let you go. Let me see. I want to ask you some questions that you can give us some tips. So based on that last little bit, what would you say if you had to give me 3 to 5 things that we could do right now to start preparing for this, to build, get our ducks in a row so that if we need some lending, some funding, give us 3 to 5 tips, like solid tips that we can do. You've probably already given to us in like
bits.
Let's organize it.
Okay, let's organize it. So I would say have a bookkeeping software in-house. Okay. There's several that are out there. I kind of gear or lean more towards QuickBooks because in most situations, I would say 99% of the time, they're compatible with most of the financial institutions' online portals. So you can set it up and every transaction is automatically put in there. You can get your P&L, your balance sheet, income statement, all that can be formed there. Get good at that first.
Yeah, that's where I got good. That's where I start. So just get good at that. 2024, that's where I went.
Right. There's a couple things I tell people. With QuickBooks, the downfall there is garbage in, garbage out. So make sure what you're putting in there is legitimate and accurate. One of the other things that I found that is in all communities, I'm sure, but I find it in our community a little bit more prevalent, is your tax, when you're filing your taxes. It's okay to go to your friend because, you know, she worked at the IRS, or you go to this person, because be very cautious in doing that. Because often I found in looking at tax returns, because what I'm looking at as a banker is I'm looking to see who did the taxes, are they reliable, and can I reach out to this person, this CPA, and say, okay, are you accepting other clients? Because I have some people I can send your way. Often what I find in looking at tax returns, I can look in, and I can see mess. I can see mess.
You can see when Pook and them did the taxes.
I can see it. And I'm like, okay, but what gets me and burns my buns again is
gets a toast
is because on that second page where it says filed by, it says self-prepared. And I said, you know what? Did you do this? No, I didn't. Okay. This is where I have a problem with this, because as far as the bank is concerned, we don't care who does the taxes. But when you're having your taxes done and I'm asking you questions about line item so-and-so and depreciation here and where this is, and you have
and you
no clue
know.
And you don't know if the IRS comes back, they're coming back on you.
They're looking at you.
You, because you self-prepared, or it said you self-prepared. So make sure that whoever you're dealing with is one used to doing taxes, have a IRS number or whatever that is to file taxes, and used to doing business taxes. That's what I meant to say. That's very important. So it's not just a matter of, you know, file your taxes. It depends on who's filing them. Now, if you're good and you know how you can file taxes and do everything correctly, keep moving to do that. But just know that if someone else is doing your taxes, it should not say self-prepared.
Wow, that's good advice. All right, okay. So we got that, okay.
The other thing is structuring. I know you've talked about a couple of times where you went from this to an LLC. Think more long-term, because if you start your business under a sole proprietor, where it's your name doing business as XYZ, it's fine. You can do that, but consider your industry. Consider the exposure or the risk that you have with that. I had one client that came in a couple years ago, and he was a non-emergency ambulance service. So he would take someone that's going to dialysis to the dialysis center from their home. He would do that. So it's a transportation, but it was good. He was a sole proprietor. I said, no, sir. No. I said, as a banker, I'll open what account you want me to, but I need you to go to a CPA or I need you to go to an attorney, because this structure is not correct.
Oh.
Because of the fact that if someone were to pass away in the back of your ambulance, they could potentially sue you, your company, and you personally.
Yeah.
You want to separate that. Do an LLC or do it some other kind of structure that separates you personally from that. Right. So that's the biggest thing that I'll see, that someone will either start one way and say, okay, I'm going to transition over to here. And it's just, it can happen, but anytime you're changing tax ID numbers, the accounts have to be closed and reopened. So you lose all of that history. And realizing too, when you have a sole proprietor, you get one EIN per lifetime under a sole proprietor. Mm. If you have an LLC, you get multiple. Every time you change a name, do something different, you get an LLC or you get a different tax ID number. Mm-hmm. Same for S Corp or C Corp. Any other function, you get different tax ID numbers. One other thing that I'll say, because I've seen this with, I think, our brown people more than anyone, is they will buy a business and keep the tax ID number that the current business had. No.
Huh.
Do not do that, because you don't know what tax liabilities they had or they were neglectful in. Get your own tax ID number, keep the name, of course, and you can deviate that name or whatever, but do not keep the same tax ID number.
Wow. Yeah.
So many people have done that. And I'm like, no. Because it will bite you in the butt.
Maybe it's something that they don't even think about. Do you think it's like they, but you would think that in the paperwork of taking over the business, that part would come up, changing the tax number. I think that goes back to financial literacy. Like, we have to start educating ourselves on the money, because it's too many areas for mistakes, and the mistakes are not easily fixed. Like, financial mistakes are not easily, you can't be like, oops, I'm sorry. Some of these mistakes can land you in jail.
And they can. Be very leery of quick money. One other thing that I wanted to make sure that we talk about, when we talk about areas for funding, I'm not oblivious. I do realize there are hard money lenders that are out there. Mm-hmm. When I said, okay, the 401k is a last ditch, there are other avenues, but just realize that the interest rate on that is exorbitant and it's not conducive in a lot of situations, especially if you're starting up, because I know there's like a online platform that's named after a vegetable or something like that, that they attach themselves to your merchant services. So they get your money before you do.
Wow. So those are shortcut areas too. I think some of those people use them as shortcuts to avoid the tedious red tape of the more established banks. And so I cannot think of too many things that end well when you take a shortcut in your business. Well, before I let you go, and we've had such a good discussion around sort of wrapping our mind or changing our mindset around this financial industry as it relates to not just personal finance, but business finance as well. You've given us some amazing tips. Have you considered or have you come across any good books? I'm thinking maybe some other resources that maybe you could share with us that could help us with some of this financial literacy that we need.
There's been a few books that are out there, but because I'm the type where a book is only as good as its copyright date. So some information may be no longer
outdated.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because even right now with the tariffs being put in place, now I'm asking my business owners another question that I have never asked before. Based on your business, how are the tariffs going to affect you, and what's your plan B and C to be able to get around that? And a lot of business owners don't have that
answer.
They don't, I mean, granted, we're in uncharted territories, but they don't have that answer. So I don't know, but I do have other resources where I can give people, like as far as like the DEC, the Dallas Entrepreneur Center, there's a plethora of information there. They do seminars there. The CDC at Watermark, great resources there. There's one for veterans, for women of enterprises that are women and women veterans, that there's a place for you. There's SCORE out there. That's a group of retired CEOs that help you with your process. So many business owners don't have a business plan, and they truly need, like in this case, when you go to any bank and you're saying, okay, I need lending, and it's not necessarily startup, but what's your plan? Where are you trying to go? And they have no clue.
Yeah, they haven't thought it through. Yeah.
They haven't thought it through.
I run across that. I'm not going to lie. That's true.
Looking at your resources that are out there, I can send this over to you as well.
Yeah, send it to me and I'll put it in the I will put it in the show notes so that people can grab it, and I'll go ahead and like link it so they can go ahead and click it very easily. I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast, Michelle. I really appreciate you. Guys, you don't know the strains we've gone through to get this podcast recorded. It has been a traumatic experience for me. I'm not going to lie. You notice I'm not even in the same location. But she has been a trooper and stuck with me as we got this done. So thank you so much for that, Michelle, and all these amazing tips that you shared with us. Guys, thank you for listening to the CEO Mindset Podcast. Here we are constantly evolving and being open to failing forward. And this season, my goal is to empower you, to encourage you, and to educate you to be the best version of yourself you can possibly be and do what you need to do to get where it is that you're trying to go. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you again back here again next week.
Bye. That does it for today. Until later. Bye. The CEO Mindset Podcast. Remember, this is the place to be to find the intersection between your personal life and your business life so that they coexist. It's also where you learn how to consistently evolve and be open to the failures that happen, be open to the opportunities, be open to the opportunity for change. Make sure you are subscribed. Leave your comments below about today's episode. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, I want to hear all about them. And I want to hear how you are using what you hear to grow your business, live the life you love, and have that quality of life that we are all looking to achieve. All right, guys, don't forget to follow me over on Instagram, AF Patrick. Definitely subscribe to my YouTube channel, Andrea Patrick Official. All the links that you need to continue following and being a part of the Be You Boss Squad community is listed in the show notes, along with any other links that I think might be amazing for this particular podcast. Remember, we are on all the podcast platforms, so if you have not already, find us and subscribe. See you again next week.